Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the podcast dedicated to pop culture and the lives that live within its gentle influence, or tightening grasp, or soul-crushing evil claws. No, depending on who you are. Here's Tom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. I'm Tom Wilson, and welcome to another episode. I already said that. I do that so much because I just turn on this recorder and start talking into it. But welcome back, everyone who's been here before. Let's go on another adventure. And for those of you who have never been here, welcome. Welcome to this magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we just today we just celebrate another day of living, huh? Which is something to celebrate. Let's face it. Not just the temporary quenching of our hungers, which seems to be all we're about so often. No, but that still small voice that whispers, "The sun will rise, and look, all is well." If we can only quiet ourselves to hear that voice. And then go back to our hungers and just the quenching of our hungers, which is what we're all about, certainly. But welcome to Big Pop Fun. This is an unusual episode. It's another episode with a friend, with Jake Johansson, who's been on the podcast before. He's several months ago. You might go back and check that one out on that interwebs that the kids have. Jake and I are old friends that I describe, and I say how we met and everything on that first podcast, but we are two comedians traveling the world, traveling certainly the English-speaking world, and doing our shows. So when we find ourselves in Los Angeles together, and I'm not in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and he's not in New Orleans, Louisiana, we get together and have lunch. Comedians, we do love to have lunch. You have to give that to us because we get up and we have work to do and we have a press to do, radio interviews, that sort of thing for upcoming performances. But there's that big chunk right in the middle of the day when what a good time waster before we actually get to things like writing and actually working is spending occasionally a long lunch with each other. You know, Broadway Danny Rose is such a wonderful, brilliant movie about show business and about comedians and their managers. Woody Allen plays a kind of a down on his luck entertainment manager. And the movie starts at the Carnegie Deli in New York City with a large table of comedians, and they're actual comedians, Morty Gunty and just all kinds of guys. Anyway, they're telling their showbiz stories to each other, and that's how the movie starts with this very, very very, very normal thing for comedians, getting together for a long lunch and just telling stories. So comedians have been doing that since way before my time. Good news is they're still doing it. When I first began here in Los Angeles, we'd go to Cantor's Deli, which I talk about in some of the podcasts down there in Hollywood. I remember a very, very excellent meal I had at Cantor's Deli. It was me, Arsenio Hall, and Keenan Ivory Wayans, as I think I've talked about before. And the three of us were having some food, and they were both telling me what a superstar I was going to be. And congratulations to both of them, Arsenio and Keenan, for becoming huge superstars. Anyway, but I have lunch with Jay. Look, hey, at Jerry's Deli in Studio City, if you're ever in the Los Angeles area and you want to see actual comedians eating lunch, there's a round table there at Jerry's Deli on Ventura Boulevard in Studio City. And just about every day, I mean, they must be there every day because I'm there quite infrequently, but every time I go, there's a table full of comedians, and Tom Dreesen is there, and an old friend John Mendoza is there, and Johnny Dark is there. All these guys have just that big tray of dill pickles, and they're having a sandwich, and they're talking to each other. Anyway, Jake Johansson, he's been on David Letterman's show, I don't know, 50 times. He works all over the country, and I thought we have these lunches that we call life coaching because, you know, we talk if he's has something going on with him, he'll bring it up, or if I do or something. And we just kind of help each other because we have a lot in common. And when we go to a city, when Jake is going to Dayton, I know really what hotel he's staying in. I know the stores that he's visiting in to look at you know, packs of batteries or things if he's bored in the afternoon. And I know the club and I know all the people at the club. So we have a good time having lunches. I thought it might be interesting if during one of these lunches, I just recorded it. So I don't know how, I don't know how good an interviewer I am outside of Starbucks when we're just hanging out, but I decided to record it. And at the end of that recording, I decided, well, I'm just going to put it up. So here is a life coaching lunch with Jake Johansson and me, Tom Wilson, on Big Pop Fun.
Tom Wilson, you're sexy.
First, we have to listen to some of the music first.
Yeah, I think you have to pay for that.
I know. That's what I'm feeling weird because we're at Starbucks. This is the first time I've done this, and I figured, oh, it'll be fine because everyone does everything at Starbucks. Everyone brings their laptop and brings textbook. Somebody could bring an Encyclopedia Britannica.
It just occurred to me.
The music.
Yeah, but I think that you can have to pay for that.
I'm fine. I don't even know who this is, who this artist is. But they're not coming after me. It's first of all, it's a girl. She's not physically getting in my face.
I don't think you understand how this works. It's
what?
Lawyers. They come at you with a lawyer. You
have lawyers
fight the girl who's singing. No.
But isn't this like a modern issue that people will have? Since when I make videos and you're outside a hotel and there are just speakers and they're just playing music, can you get away from this anymore?
Well, you have to. We could be in your house or your basement or in your car. We could go sit in your car.
We don't know this girl's not showing up at my house.
She's not going to be playing
singing
on a speaker
no
at your house.
I think that is true. I think that's true. But those are the issues. Those are issues that artists have. I mean, recording artists and visual artists. Of if they pump Wonder Bread into your head from the time you're 2 years old until you're 30. Can you make a painting of it because it's been pushed in your head so much? Or do they say, no, we've pushed it into your head, you know what it is, but you're not allowed to comment on it. You're not allowed it to, you know, it's not allowed to come out of your head in any creative way.
Well, that is an interesting, it's interesting when you're allowed to do what and how and who can sue. Anybody can sue anybody for anything. That's the main
thing. Dynasty, what was her name? Linda Evans. A guy sued her for controlling his thoughts and making him do bad things. And she had to show up in court. Like she had, you know, of course it was thrown out, but you'll have to hire a lawyer.
Really?
And yeah. And in order to, you can't just go to the court like, hey, can anyone see this? The guy, like, I'm not controlling the guy's thoughts. No, you have to go to a lawyer. Pay a lawyer to go up and say, Ms. Evans, are you controlling this man's thoughts? No.
That was
the defense rests, Your Honor.
Terrible Linda Evans impression.
Okay.
I mean, you didn't even try.
Ms. Evans, are you controlling this man's thoughts at all?
No.
Thank you. I rest my case.
Better. I thought that was what you were going to do the first time, and so I was so disappointed.
I didn't know that Linda Evans was one of the Mouseketeers for the second one.
But yeah, it was still probably not so good, but at least you tried. And well, I feel like
I'm glad
that's
I did.
This is a
lunch that you and I have often. When we find ourselves in Los Angeles together, I'm sure I've said it in the introduction, but this is the fabulous Jake Johansson, found at jakethis.com and on stages across America. You found it, yeah. jakethis.com, mm-hmm. didn't
yes.
you?
Yeah, I did.
It's an excellent website.
I would have liked to have jake.com, but I don't even know who has that.
I wanted tomwilson.com, but those guys that came in very early and sold the websites, the web addresses from them.
No.
So we go out to lunch frequently when we find ourselves in town together, but I find it interesting that we call it life coaching.
It is sort of life coaching. This is the first time that we've actually brought microphones, which makes it a little bit. I just realized we're probably the people doing the weirdest thing within 100 yards of us.
In L.A.? I doubt that.
100 yards from here.
100 yards? Maybe. Oh, there are a couple of guys with a little poodle over there at the table.
That's just two guys and a dog.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watch that show, Two Guys and a Dog.
I love that. But I wanted to let the listeners of Big Pop Fun, and you could use this on your podcast, or we could do it on your podcast, which is the Jake This podcast, right?
I think I called it the Jake This of Jake Johansson podcast.
Oh, okay.
I used the preposition of because I thought that was funnier. But then I think when it appears, I think someone corrected it. Or there's some spell grammar fixer in the universe.
It's
anyway, what am I going to do on my pod? What are we going to do?
We're going to life coach.
Oh, okay.
We're allowing the listeners, if we can hear over whoever this is, Vicky Carr or what, it had to be the day when they're doing all the peppy swing music at Starbucks. We don't get Andreas Vollenweider.
No, I don't know who that is.
He's a harp player.
The other thing is you go inside. The music is better inside. It's Stevie Wonder in there.
Oh, it's Stevie Wonder inside, but it's louder even inside.
Yeah, it's
even
louder inside.
And it's got that clatter.
I say we
let's just try
we'll
this.
Just work it out.
And I'll just hear it.
Yeah, I'm not
and
trying
we'll,
to poo-poo it.
Were trying to stop a little bit.
No, I was trying to suggest an alternative. I don't want to stop.
What's the alternative?
We could go get in your car. I mean, that's weirder than this. I mean, if you think this is weird, two guys in their car talking into microphones. And well, people, we got to take a picture of...
I think
so. Well,
I
don't want to blow this outfit that you've got on. It's one of your potential...
No, please. Yeah. Please don't. Because I made a mistake on the outfit. Fine.
This is what I've been trying.
A bright, bright red Philadelphia Phillies jacket with actually a Cleveland Indians hat.
You look like a guy. You look like you could be on your way to manage a ball game right now.
Thanks. It means a lot to me.
Let's face it, we're both too old to be players. Players, yeah, that's
over. You speak for yourself. I could, I could get in shape.
In the major leagues?
I could.
There's no 50-year-old major league baseball player.
As a groundskeeper? That 50-pound bag of...
When that guy comes home and says, I had a good game to his wife, she just rolls her eyes, the groundskeeper.
Yeah, okay, all right. But we're allowing people into one of our life coaching sessions.
Yeah, I need some life coaching. Well, I also go talk to a talkie helper.
Oh,
Helper doctor.
A talkie helper?
Not a doctor. She's not a doctor.
Is that good?
It is good. It is good. It's not cheap, you know? I mean, and I don't go to one of the super expensive ones, I go to a talkie.
And what is that? Is that once a week, or what do you do that once a month?
Once a week-ish,
or
if I'm in town. It works out to be two, maybe three times a month, because I'm out of town, so I miss sometimes. But I do that, and then this. It's good to bounce some things off of another person who might be able to help talk you down. The reason that you go to the talkie helper is, just to finish that
off. Sure, man.
Because it seemed like you're asking me if it's good.
Yeah, I just wonder. Like, if it's good for you, maybe it's good for
me. People might be curious about it. The reason that I like it is because, it's everybody gets something about telling their friend what's bugging them and what's going on with them.
Right.
But the great thing about the talkie helper that you pay is that you don't have to, they don't tell you their problems, and they're totally. They're paid, so they're on. They're listening. They're really listening to you.
So they're pretty good when they make the suggestion. It's usually a pretty good one.
If they make a suggestion, yeah.
If they do, what do you?
Well, they don't always make a suggestion. Sometimes you talk it out. You know, the best ones are where you're talking about your stuff, and then you realize something at the same time that the other person might suggest something. That happens kind of a lot.
Does that help? What am I trying to ask here? Does it help to adjust your radar screen so all that stuff is not coming in so you feel better? Or does it help in a way that all this stuff still comes into the radar screen, but there's a way that you can filter it when it comes in that makes you feel better? Did that make any sense? Probably not.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood that
I'm distracted
question.
By Sinatra.
Now it's Frank Sinatra.
It is Frank Sinatra.
He's good. The guys who come after you for using his music are not guys you want to have to deal with.
But I'm glad. No, but look, you do that and you feel better.
I feel
and you
better.
Feel it's worthwhile.
And I come see you,
and that's
I
good.
Feel better, yeah, yeah, it's good. It's good. If you can afford it, it's good. If you can't, you know what? Meditation is another. But I've been trying to meditate. My talker helper person has been telling me about meditating.
And how do you meditate?
Well, you just sit and concentrate on your breath. You sit with your back straight, and you breathe in and out, and you concentrate on your breath.
So I'm really asking these things.
Let
I'm not
go of
being,
all your other thoughts.
Yeah, I'm not being. Broadway Danny Rose would say, I'm not being didactic or facetious in any manner. I mean, you sit in a position? Do you sit in like one of those yoga, like a cross-legged thing?
No, I just sit in a chair. Yeah, I sit in a chair. Some people do. But the thing, you can do walking around. The whole thing is to just kind of try and get back inside of your body, because I feel like that's most of your problems, one's problems, my problems, are because you're worrying about things that are out of your control and also outside of your body, you know, or even outside of time. You're worrying about what if something happens in the future because of something that I can't control. And so by meditating, you're sending this conscious, subconscious message back to your brain, like, hey, inside of this, inside here, it's just me, and I'm okay. You know, I'm just... I'm not actually under threat. You know, sometimes you get panicky and worried about shit that is not happening to you. I mean, most of the time you're worried about something that's not actually happening to you. You're worried about something that might be happening. And so when you meditate, it helps you get in touch with the fact, like, that really is not happening to me.
Do you think is it the nature of the breathing itself, or while you're breathing, are you thinking of that thing? I'm really asking these. You're looking at me like I'm trying to make up. I mean, I'm actually asking you questions.
No, I'm nervous because I'm not really I'm by no means. I took a little seminar on meditating, and I'm not an expert about it at all.
But I'm saying, like, when you're doing it, and you're connecting with your breath, and you're saying,
and
I am now exhaling.
Well,
I am
no,
now
no,
inhaling,
really
or you just kind of
you just breathe in and out,
into
and you
that
focus
rhythm?
On that and what it feels like, and you try and if you have other distractive thoughts, which you have, you know, like you start thinking about, hey, when I'm done with this, I'm going to take a shower, then I'm going to go have lunch with my friend, or I got to pick my kid up at school, or hey, I forgot to FedEx that thing to that guy. You know, when you have those thoughts, you just kind of babysit yourself a little bit and say, okay, I had that thought. I'm going to let go of that. I'm going to get back, bring myself back to just breathing. That's my understanding of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just me, my concept of
it. No, that's cool. How long do you do it?
I can, you know, the people who really get going are getting up there 45 minutes or an hour. But I just try and sit down for, I mean, 5-10 minutes is good. Just to kind of push pause, just to send the message to the world, like, you're just going to have to wait a minute. You know, that's a good message to send to the world. Like, I'm just going to be me for 10 minutes, and everybody else can leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And it works.
I don't know. But, yeah, plenty of people say it works. I feel pretty good, but I can't say that it's because of meditation, because, like I say, I'm not doing that as much as I wish I was doing. But that's another thing I want to do.
So lunch with me. Talking to the talkie person.
I would give up the meditation in a second if I could, you know, if you live closer.
I feel strongly that you should.
And I might move closer
I
to
feel,
you.
Because you live in Santa Monica, California, very close to the beach. I feel strongly that you should stop meditating and seeing the talkie person and use that money to buy me a house.
Near me.
Near you. Yeah.
I do like the idea of you living near me more than me coming out here to live
near
you.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine here.
I could just say I might be able to set you up in a very small apartment, but, I mean, I don't think there's going to be room for... Well, that's your business if your wife and family want to join you. And that, you know, I'm just
I'd be
saying,
really squeezed.
I'm just saying it's going to be an adjustment for everybody.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, bad news, honey. Yeah. Jake's given up meditation and the talking.
In fact, it might be just a motorhome in my driveway that you...
Your driveway kind of has quite a slope, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. But once you get to sleep, they say that's actually good. When you get your head downhill from your feet, you get a blood... It gives you a good little blood surge. It's like gravity boots. You just sleep in the camper so that your head is downhill from your feet. That's what I'm going to recommend.
When did you move near the ocean? Because everyone has this dream, or certainly people who live in California or even on the East Coast, like a lot of people want to live at the ocean. So when did that really occur to you?
Let me tell you a story. I started my career in San Francisco, and then I moved here to L.A. in 87. And I had a you know, a big, it was a big entry into town. You know, I had a manager and I got an HBO special.
Yeah, you were just hotsy-totsy guy, yeah.
You know, and there's a story going around, you know, I was developing a show at Castle Rock the same time as Jerry Seinfeld was developing his show, Seinfeld. And there was a moment of time where it was like, hey, Jake, you should be in Jerry's show, one of the guys in Jerry's show. Of course, now I seem like a moron. But at the time, it was like, no, I'm going to keep doing my show. I've got a show, so I'm going to be in my show. You know, we're both going to be in hit shows on TV.
Right.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Hey, that's fine.
I was wrong. Jerry went on to be on a hit show on TV, and I went on to buy a house near the ocean. So,
It was back then,
yeah,
when you were the big hot guy.
It was 1990.
Okay.
I saved up enough almost to have a down payment, and then my dad spotted me. I think it was 10 grand to make the down payment, which I had to keep secret from the bank.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it was a small amount in the terms of the price of the whole thing. And I was able to pay him back pretty quickly because I, you know. But anyway, so in 1990, I moved close to the beach. And it was mostly because my good friend from San Francisco had got an apartment out there. And he was telling me how great it was. You know, he was right on Main Street there
sure.
by that One Life grocery store. And I go out and hang out with him. I was like, this is awesome. You know, you look at the show business, even when you're successful, it's like there's a lot of jerks who are trying to tell you what to do and undermine your self-confidence. And, you know, there's a lot of show business can be a bit of a punchy fight, ego-wise. And so you move out by the beach, you look at the ocean, and it puts things into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There's no assholes out in the ocean. I mean, sharks, real sharks.
But they're doing what they do.
They're doing what they do.
A shark.
Right. And so so I did that early on. I feel like that, you know, nowadays a lot of comics like to live over by Silver Lake, and there's a great, you know, that new hip comedy scene is over there because that's where all those guys live.
Mm-hmm.
So they've recruited these venues near where they live to have these fun shows, you know, like that Nerd Melt.
Right, on
place.
Sunset, right.
I mean, that's just a fun hang to go over there. But for me, it's a schlep because
I'm relaxing.
I'm getting my mind right by the beach. And so... yeah, the beach is great. It's great for getting your mind right, and I love living there. And I couldn't ever imagine moving away from the ocean.
No. Well, even then, you know, in 1990, Santa Monica's always been... those houses are pricey there. Even the very modest homes are very close to the ocean, and it's a very nice place to live.
Well, I bought on the edge of the... that edge of this triangle of gang activity first,
mm-hmm.
and so I got a good deal on a house, and then... it was tiny, and then when I moved to the place I am now, it was really dilapidated, and it had been rented as a low income rental thing, and that property had potential, but it wasn't. It was not nice. It was a shack. It had been on the market for a long time, and nobody was buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought it, and I did a thing that most people thought was crazy. But I knew I had an idea. I could imagine what it would be like when it was done. Unlike almost everyone in show business, you have to actually make the movie and then show it to them before they will give you the money to make the movie.
Right, right.
You know, you can never kind of... But I could see with this place that it was going to be nice when I fixed it up how I wanted to. And it is.
It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, what if your friends don't come to your house to visit or go to a party or something and go, hey, wow, this is great.
Well, right. I feel like it's a pretty nice place, but it's not like Tim Allen nice.
Oh, no, I don't mean it like that palace or something.
It's not like mansion-y.
No, I just mean a very nice neighborhood, ocean breeze. You could see the water around your neighborhood.
I can walk to coffee.
Right. Yeah, I didn't mean like a hooray for Hollywood, gigantic, that kind of obscene wealth showing off thing. I just mean, you know, hey, it would be very pleasant to live here.
It is pleasant to live. I like living there.
Yeah.
And I hope I can keep doing that.
I think you will be able to.
All I need is more people to come to my live shows. So now let's get down to life.
Okay.
How do I make that happen?
How do you...
I mean, people are already coming, and we're having a good time. And what I want to know is, why is that such a fucking secret?
You mean to the other people?
To the other people.
Who are not... It's not that they're deciding not to come. They don't know
about it. They don't know. And the people who are there... I think a lot of the people who come to my show must be selfish because...
They're keeping it to themselves.
They don't tell anyone else what a good time they had. Well, they do. They do now with Twitter. People tweet you that you had a nice show. Do you do that when someone tweets you and says, "Hey, Tom, last night, Friday Late Show, I came with my wife. We had the greatest time. We're still peeing our pants about it." Do you then retweet that tweet?
You know, a lot of comedians do. And for a while, I figured, oh, a lot of comedians do that, so I guess that's what you do. But I can't do it without feeling a little self-conscious.
Yeah, like, I feel a little bit like I'm high-fiving myself,
yeah.
But I'm not.
No, I don't think you are. I think you're saying,
hey, everyone a picture of another guy high-fiving me.
I agree with you. So the answer to mine is sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't.
Right. We'll just do whatever we want. Well, you can't let these other people, the Twitter police, make you self-conscious about your Twitter behavior.
Isn't it amazing?
I'm holding the microphone right now.
You are holding the microphone like a game show. You're holding the microphone like whatever.
My fingertips.
Yeah, like a 1970s game show host.
My hand was kind of cramping up the other way. Anyway.
But I'm just glad I have someone on the podcast who's holding the microphone close to their mouth. Because comedians, I think, just do it naturally. I mean, the microphone.
You have a lot of cowboys on your podcast, I've noticed.
A lot of cowboys?
You have a few. You've had a few cowboys.
I've had a few cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you enjoy those podcasts?
Yes, I did. I'm a little behind on the
oh, that's
Big
okay.
Pop Fun. But yeah.
That's the nature of podcasts.
Some of those are my favorite. What the guy whose dad got in a fight with John Wayne. That
if you get in a fist fight with John Wayne and you're a stuntman, that's probably the coolest thing that anyone could ever do.
You know, people have goals of, like, they get in their head, like, oh, I'd like to meet John Wayne. I want to meet that guy. I want to meet that guy who got in a fight with John Wayne. This parking job right behind you is a pretty good show.
That is. Wow, that is a very, very tight space.
Yeah.
And this Ford didn't do them. Yeah, no, neither of the other drivers did this guy any favors.
He's changed his
mind.
With
their parking spaces.
Or she. Yeah. She was going to go for that, though.
So what are you doing now in order to get more people to come to your shows?
This.
Wow, really?
This is it.
You've gotten that desperate?
This is
it. You're coming to it.
Well, I have my podcast, the Jake This of Jake Johansson podcast, which I think I mentioned once already. So, and that's a way. I feel like these are a way that your fans can know what you're doing from week to week and be in touch and feel connected to.
Right.
Or maybe tell other people. I don't always know. And so that, you got to be on Twitter and Facebook, so I'm doing that. And I'm telling people at the show, hey, come watch this, do that, get on my email list, come to the... Because I think most of it is just people don't know that this is a good thing to do.
Do you have a chunk of time that you spend during your show doing that?
A little kind of chunk.
What do you do at the very end?
It's about 5-10 minutes before the end. I say, hey... By the way, I've got a website. You can go to my website. I have a little banner with the website's name on it hanging up that I point to.
Uh-huh.
And then I say, I've got a DVD and a CD if you want. I'm running a small gift shop after the show. And then I've got a couple of T-shirts that I'm selling and whatnot. And so it's a little funny. It's a little funny infomercial
about
me towards the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of, I feel like it's mildly funny. And it's also telling people, like, look, you're having a good time. There is no reason we can't do this again,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, I've always said you have great T-shirts. You have great. You don't have a lot of merchandise. I mean, as you know, there are guys. A lot of the feature entertainer, the guy that goes on before we do, he does 20 minutes, and sometimes you come out and the guy has an 8-foot-long folding table of T-shirts and bumper stickers and doodads.
I feel like for those guys, you know, they're the people. Whenever I'm working with those guys, they always like, "Hey, do you mind if I sell my stuff?" I was like, "Yeah, I don't. Absolutely.
Oh, of course.
I'm just doing it because I get a kick out. I have fun. And you make a little bit of extra money. It gives people an excuse to come over and talk to you if they want to say hello. Now you're just not a creepy guy who's standing out there trying to handshake everybody. You're out there for a reason. Like, hey, do you want to buy a DVD? But if you don't, you can come and say hi. We get a picture taken together. You can put it on your Facebook. We're going to be friends now. But yeah, so if the feature wants to sell stuff, I say, yeah, absolutely. Because then and now I got company. And also, they need it. You know, they can really use that if they're making on the week a few $100 extra.
Oh, you mean the feature guy before us? Oh, absolutely.
They can use the money. So
those guys drive a lot of places. They need gas money.
But it is funny sometimes when they get a pretty big operation. It's like a convenience store.
Yeah.
You can get everything.
Yeah, but you have DVDs and T-shirts, right? I just have a DVD because, you know, as I've told you, you're lucky in that free hand at the airport has a duffel bag full of T-shirts. My free hand at the airport has a guitar in it.
Right. Well, so, I checked the T-shirt. I checked that. Oh.
This is going so well.
It's
going
to be an exciting podcast. If you're an 8-year-old boy, just try and imagine what all the things driving.
And then they were in the middle of a fire, Dad. Yeah.
And if you're a middle-aged man or an older man, a gentleman who's around 75 years old would probably get a kick out of a lot of this music.
They really would.
Yeah.
Well, we're just here at Ventura Boulevard at a Starbucks outside on the patio with people having their quiet conversations. Our quiet conversation, however, is being recorded because we thought maybe it would be interesting.
I think, here's the thing, is going forward into the future, what you want is for people to know that this is what we're going to be doing at this time on this day, and then they'll show up here to do it. They'll come and be on it.
Good for guests. Starbucks, good for us.
That's what we're going to say to Starbucks when they say when they ask us politely to leave. Oh, I need to. I hope
we're going
to. I always like to take a phone call from
take a phone call on the podcast. Sure, it's good. I'm going to. We'll be right back. We're back. Phone call over.
I get no kick from champagne.
No, that's the only thing with cutting it and coming back in was we
get
now,
a little music problem, but we're over that. We hit the music pump.
A lot of your material is so observational and autobiographical, so subjective. I know it's a question like everyone gets, to writers or where do you get your ideas? But as you're walking around, is there really an internal monologue going on with you of noticing things?
No. I
don't mean that like you ever notice there's no blue food. I don't mean that. I mean things with what your take is the experiences in your life.
But do you know when you're talking to as a comedian, I feel like this happens to all comedians. I don't think it's just me. But you're talking to someone and they'll say, is that part of your act? You should put that in your act. And usually it's like, well, what kind of a jerk do you think I am? I'm not trying my act out on you.
Right.
You know.
But that's just the way that you've communicated.
But that moment when then it makes you think like maybe I should write that down, because if you don't write it, if you don't make a little note somehow, you're going to forget it. And now with your phone, you can do that on your phone. You can so now I feel like there's a little part of me that if I'm having a conversation with someone and they laugh, that says, is that in my act? Should that be in my act? And then it's even a crazy. This is why I have to meditate to turn that off. Because I don't need to be asking myself all day long, is that in your act? Is there something you could put in your act?
Could this be in your act? Can that happen?
Not exact. No, not like you get crazy. But I do think you're – it's not that I'm constantly trying to look for things in my act. But if something happens, then if it's a funny story – well, usually a funny story means it's something bad happens to you. Like you have a miserable time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good story for your act. People love to hear about your miserable time.
When you were in high school – Were you like a funny guy in any way that you could be funny? Were you like the clown kid? Or have you always been funny in the specific way that Jake is funny? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
No. I do know what you're saying.
Observational, like, did you see incongruity when you were in 11th grade and pointed out to people?
In 11th grade, are you kidding? We're just watching Saturday Night Live or Monty Python. You go to school and repeat some funny thing that you'd seen. I think that's what people do now,
yeah.
Right? They go and recreate and repeat things and they get a catchphrase or something. Now they've just got so much more to choose from than, when I was a boy, all we had was Monty Python and Saturday Night Live.
But I'm just asking because you have such an individual individual kind of worldview and manner of delivery, don't you think?
I'm uncomfortable with this type of complimentary talk about me.
But I feel like the manner in which you time out your conversation with the audience on stage, was that always in there?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
In which you pause, the manner in which you deliver.
I feel like it took me 4 years to stop trying to be someone else and to start trying to figure out who I was. And so I think the way I am on stage, as with all comedians that you like, they're doing some version of themselves, some distilled version. They've taken some of the things out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this kind of serious talk that we're doing now, I try and keep that to a minimum in your comedy show. you know,
right,
and then and mostly stick to the to the to the stories and the ways of being that are kind of funny, and it's
but
also
I'm
a natural.
I'm asking for comedians who are out there. I'm asking for young people who are out there and thinking, how do you think about being funny?
I mean, I've said this before, but I think the best, the most effective way to be original is to be yourself. You know, you find out what parts of yourself are the most humorous and entertaining, and then you try and do more of that and less of the other parts of yourself when you're on stage. So while that is me on stage doing my act, it is also a part of me. I'm like an iceberg, Tom. A lot of me is below the surface, and just the really funny part sticks out, and that's where the seals and
that's
the polar bears
are.
That's where
the ship sinking comes in.
No, that bottom part is what I sink the ships with.
Oh, yeah.
The parts you don't see. That's what
sinks
the ships.
Of course, that's what I mean. Yeah, and the top is only, we could wave at a polar bear, but we have no idea.
You don't know what's going on in the dark bottom of my iceberg.
That's good. That's good. I have nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're like an iceberg, too.
I am.
Only you're a multifaceted. You're like a snowflake-shaped iceberg because you have... Your iceberg can rotate. You know, 1 minute a pointy part of the iceberg of you is a comedian part is up above water, and then all at once, sploosh, and then another. But the paint. I'm a painter.
Wait, we're not talking about me, though. We're talking about you.
No, I'm talking about you. I'm telling you, everyone. I'm just an iceberg that's always got one part pointing up. You're an iceberg that kind of is shifts and rolls around in this. You're a very dangerous. You can hurt an audience a lot of ways. Because. You're funny, you can sing, you can play the guitar, you can paint pictures, which you don't do on stage.
I don't do that on stage. That takes too long.
People. You wrote a book. Do people know about your book? Do you mention your book?
Excuse me,
on your podcast.
Pardon me, yeah.
If my part of your podcast is sponsored by your book. Which is available
on
Amazon.
You read the book before it was ever published. I sent the book to you to saying... Hey, I've written, I think, a kind of a crazy thing that I went way out on a limb, I think, writing, thinking I'm going to continue to do this until the end, and it may be a huge mistake. But I sent it to you, and
I really liked it, and I feel like I'm talking to the people who would really like it. You, people, if you're listening to this podcast, you like Tom Wilson. If you like Tom Wilson, you should read this book, because you probably, this is what I said in my introduction of you on my podcast. I don't know if you listened to the one where you talked to me on the phone.
I did, but I didn't listen to the intro.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. How did you just
fast forward. Kind of like, just...
Well, it was just like, hey, we're two guys talking on the... I'm talking to my friend Tom on the phone, and, you know, what is my podcast for? It's for people who like me, you know, to listen to more me talking about things that I like. And one of the things that people who like someone really want to know, the question people most ask about famous people is, what is he really like? Like, hey, what is David Letterman really like? And it's like, I don't know what David Letterman, I don't know what David Letterman's really like. I kind of know, I get that was a nice chair.
Yeah, that was.
I kind of know what I'm really like, and I kind of know what you're really like, but I wouldn't know how to answer that question. The best way to find out, though, is to listen. You know, you listen to me. This is what it would be like to be my friend, is you listen to me talk like this. This is your being
I guess
my
that's
friend
true,
right
huh?
now.
Yeah.
And I'm being your friend, only I'm doing most of the talking today, which is, you know, pretty awesome.
I did. I like it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. But if people are fans of yours and they want to know what you're really like or what's going on
in
there.
What goes on in my head.
What's going on in that part of the iceberg that I can't see? They see how I circle back to the
you
iceberg
did.
Thing?
Iceberg.
I didn't know I was going to do that before.
That's good. That's professional.
They should read your book because not only is it kind of a memoir, but it's also a fantastical memoir. So they get a sense of your imagination. They get a sense of your real life. They get a sense of what show business is like from your point of view, you know, without having to put too fine of a point on the whole thing of, like, the thing that you're most famous for is such a little tiny part of you. And that whole thing is really explained in the book in a way that I feel like is entertaining and clear to people. So, there.
Well,
you should check out the book. It's called The Masked Man. Is
you're
that right?
Right. You're
yes.
right.
And it's by Tom Wilson.
Well,
How do you not know that? You're listening to
no,
his podcast
I do. I
right
try
now.
To do a little commercial of it in every podcast, just to say if people haven't downloaded it, to try to download it.
try to download it. Well, no, don't just try.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Yeah. Put your credit card in. You know, download it a couple of times to see. Just see if Amazon will let you buy it twice. I'm curious.
But, Jake, as you don't even know this, but you left a message on my phone after you read it. So at that point, I think of finishing a book. You send it to a friend like you. And, I mean, your just heart is just out of your body waiting to hear whether you would like it or whether you... I mean, you wouldn't hate it, but you would be gentle about it, saying, Tom, I'm not... You know, I'm not exactly sure what you're getting out of the second half or whatever. Anyway, it was a phone message, beep, and you just said, Wilson, you magnificent bastard, I read your book!
Well, that's from Patton.
From Patton, from right. The movie Patton. But then you were very complimentary about the book. But my point being, I have saved that message until now.
Are you going to play it on the show?
I'll try. I don't know how to do that.
Well, you can just put it on. The easiest way to do it is just turn this thing on and put the microphone
try to do
in
that.
Front
yeah.
of the speakerphone.
Right, but I have...
Yeah, there you go.
But
you
yes, could. But I saved it just because it was such a feeling of triumph with the book. And not that it would be some huge bestseller or whatever. The feeling really was, hey... Jake gets what I mean.
Well, that's what you that's what we were talking about it the other day, because you were telling me it has not yet become a bestseller, and I was saying, well, you know, you got to really look at what you're trying to do. You didn't write it for that. You wrote it
right.
You wrote it to say a thing about something about you, and it's really a great that, and so people should. I think it's, is it out on audio now yet?
Yeah, I finished the audio and I'm putting it together and I'm trying to figure out how you put out an audiobook. I guess you put that on iTunes too and you do it through some.
Yeah. Or you know, maybe you can get into it with Audible. They may know that may be that's a way that you
right.
can do it.
So I have the big thing that's all recorded now and done, mm-hmm. and now I'm saying, well, okay, how. Do I take
so
this?
Now it's just a matter of clerical, secretarial.
Right. So it's going to be out there.
Personal assistant.
Audio book.
Perfect. Good.
Do you write in other ways other than your profession, other than stand-up comedy? Or have you?
I did. When I was developing TV shows, I wrote episodes with other people of the pretend TV show that never happened. And, the one that we were going to do. I wrote a little, Charles Zucker.
Yes.
He and I wrote an episode in the very early, you could go online, but there wasn't the internet. You had to do dial up, and then we would dial up and share the script back and forth over the internet.
Right.
It was a big friggin' deal.
Yeah.
I mean, we felt like astronauts when we were doing that in 19.
And that was Iron Man that I tell about in the introduction of your first time you were on the podcast.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about the title of it anymore. But anyway, so I wrote that, and, I wrote a feature script with a friend of mine, but no, I haven't done anything else. I feel like I'm in the category. Who is it that said I don't like writing, but I like having written?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so I feel like
you like that better?
I think I like having written more than write. I mean, I suppose when I sit down and I write stuff for my act, like just to sit down and brainstorm something or start typing something mm-hmm. up that I've already started to kind of see if I can sprinkle some more funny in there. I get into that flow experience where you forget, you lose track of time, mm-hmm. And you really enjoy it. But it's I so far haven't disciplined myself to try that. I hesitate to say that I'm never going to do it. But of course, any writer out there who's listening to this knows, like if you want to be a writer, you got to write. And so if you're not writing, you can't say that you're a writer. You know.
Well,
so,
well, you're quite a writer from the things that you write your own.
I write
your own material that you perform on stage.
But I don't have, for example, what you once showed me. And this would be the one I came to your house, the first house that we were talking about earlier in our lunch.
Yes. You came to my house?
I came to that house, and you were showing me your journals that you've kept for how many years?
Oh, for a long time.
And you write daily?
30 years. Not daily. Oh, I did for a long time ago, I did. But then it really becomes... Yeah, I had the same breakfast today.
Right, but you could go back in. You could go back in, for example, and look at, like Freaks and Geeks, which is the thing that you did. That I got to find that and watch it because I just mm-hmm. read the Vanity Fair thing that had your picture in it, the Judd Apatow issue.
Sure, yeah.
And I want to go watch Paul Feig. I like that guy, and I want to go watch Freaks and Geeks now.
Right.
But you could go back to your journals from when you were doing that.
Yes.
And kind of remember
and see all the kind of stories and the various things that happened on the set. Yeah, I did it. I wrote down a lot of stuff as a kid, and I probably, you know, embarrassingly threw that stuff out. But once I decided that I'm going to try to be in show business, and I was about 19 years old, I started writing stuff down, just honestly thinking, look, show business is probably going to kick me in the teeth and send me back to Philadelphia to get a job, and then I'll do that. But I'll have this little written record of that time that I really went for something that was exciting and I met interesting people. So I started writing things down. I'm as surprised as anyone. Let's put it this way. I'm more surprised than anyone that just the adventure continued. And some other very interesting thing happened where I thought to myself, boy, I should really write that down, you know? I should really write that down. Just not I just thought if my grandfather had done it, I think it would be fascinating for me to read about what it was like to be a carpenter in the 1940s in the East Coast of the United States. I would love to read that. So I thought for my grandchildren or great-grandchildren, they can, of course, now, of course, they'll say, oh, my grandpa, you know, he was in that movie and he did this stuff. But to have a lot of books that my hand was on, that I wrote with a pen into about these stories, if I was that kid, it would just mean a lot to me.
It's a pretty amazing, well, I mean, the first thing you think is, oh, he was that guy. He was the guy who wrote, look, whatever they think about what your most known, famous, the thing that most people immediately say the first off about you, when they come into, when they look at a pile of books as tall as two men, and I go, he while he was doing everything, he wrote all this down. I mean, that says something about you that says a lot, you know, that you're a person who makes an effort.
Well, I don't mean to get all like philosophical about it, but it is true. Aristotle said the unexamined life is not worth living. So it's about examining this adventure that I've been on, and admittedly, it's been an amazing adventure. Now, at least 140 times during the adventure, I'm done with the adventure.
You thought you were going to quit.
I thought, you know, like, it's just the roller coaster now is really making my stomach ill, I want to get off.
But by the time you realized that you're on, you know, I got off the normal bus so long ago,
right,
that I don't even know where it stops anymore.
That's absolutely true.
There's no getting off. There's no backup plan. There's only this now, or different side versions of this,
right?
Which is not.
And I think a lot of us, certainly me, I don't know about you, but I kind of painted myself into a corner early on to make myself fight my way out.
It took me a while. I had enough. You know, of course, that thing with the TV show. Yeah, if that had gone, my life would be very different. But I don't know that. I don't know that Tim Allen or Ray Romano are happier than I am.
I'm sure
that they're very happy people.
Yeah.
Or that they've got every right to be as happy as I am, but I'm a happy person.
Right.
But I didn't really realize that I was painting myself into a corner, or that until, I don't know, it was maybe 10 years ago. It was like, or you know, oh,
really?
It's too late for me to go be a sitcom writer now. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And I might get a part in a movie here or there, or a bit, maybe some TV thing is going to happen. But I'm not going to be maybe a TV star. I'm a comedian. My thing is live performance. I do live performance for people who come and see me, and I really enjoy it, and they really enjoy me. And once I finally said that to myself, like, hey, that is who I am. Then you don't have to feel crappy when you're going out. When you run into people at the Improv and they're like, "What's going on with you?" and you tell them, "I'm going to Biloxi, Mississippi."
Right.
You don't have to feel like that's a bad thing. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. What are you doing? You know.
Right.
I'm happy. I got a wife and a kid. We could see the beach from our bed. You know.
Right.
So
that's pretty good.
It is good. Not the beach. I can see the ocean, but not the beach. There's tall buildings right on the beach, so I can't, technically. I want to be honest. I want to be honest with your listeners.
But you can see the ocean.
I can see the ocean.
Do you see boats?
If they're out there.
See? You can see boats from your bed. You can see
not
boats.
Not really tiny boats. If they're far away, I can't.
Okay.
You get older,
you can see
your
big
eyes
boats. Very large
boats.
I can boats.
See sailboats from my house.
That's
if
pretty good.
If they're out there.
And you go surfing, right? You're a
I
surfer?
Do. Sometimes I go surfing. I try that stand-up paddleboard thing. I'm hoping to get better at that.
I saw a bunch of guys doing that in Santa Barbara a few mm-hmm. days ago. The big surfboard, wide, very floaty, so it's thick. And they go out. Yeah, it's a long paddle, and you stand up on the surfboard, and you kind of paddle around.
Yeah.
It looked like a lot of fun, but maybe a steep learning curve.
No, it's not too bad. It's a balancey thing. It's a balancey thing. And then the sensation is you feel like, oh, now I'm going to be paddling around on a – I'm going to be surfing. I can go – when the waves are really small, I could still catch a wave on this thing, which turns out to be that's really hard. You want to just get outside where the waves are breaking and paddle around. But you don't have to go out very far before you feel like I am in the giant ocean on a tiny boat. And it's not really even a boat.
Right.
It's like a really
like a
great piece of flotsam
yeah,
or
yeah.
jetsam. I get confused which one of those is which.
Because my legs are all kind of rickety. So I can't really get up that as quickly as one needs to, because I really hadn't factored in. When you're surfing, you really have to pop up fast.
You have to get up pretty quick.
You really have to, like, you know, like paddle, boom, up on your feet. And that's the thing. I think I could surf if I could get up. I could certainly paddle. I could do all those things. But it's that split second of from lying down bing, to standing up that, I'm not good at that.
You might be better off just getting a shorter board and just catching the waves on your stomach.
I think that's what I'm doing, because I bought a board like that. I bought a board because I'm bigger than, like, boogie boards. Mm-hmm. So boogie boards don't float me.
Yeah,
so I bought about a 4.5-foot hard board that I use as a boogie board.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great. That's a good time. So that's a thing that we could do. We could
just
do that
go in
together.
The ocean, splash around.
Yeah. We could go swimming in the ocean.
Yeah. It really is something. Now, you grew up in what state?
Iowa.
Iowa, of course.
I was born there, but I grew up, most of my childhood was in Wisconsin, just across the border.
Uh-huh. But a lot of people, well, they're listening from around the world and certainly in the heartland of America, but I grew up in Pennsylvania and you in Iowa. And that thing, that feeling when the sun is right. And you're in the Pacific Ocean, and it's like these big waves with surf dudes. I mean, really, in my head, the Beach Boys are playing. It's really a magical thing.
It just makes you happy. Like I was talking about the ocean earlier, it just puts everything in perspective. And it reminds you, in the same way that meditation can remind you, look, you're just a little animal. You're just a little animal on this planet. And so... you don't really, all these things that you're worried about, all you really need to be is safe and full of food and get some sleep, you know, have sex every once in a while. When you swim in the ocean sometimes, it just makes you happy. You're just like, I'm just happy. I'm not thinking about anything else right now. I'm just happy playing in these waves. You could be kind of an older person. You could be a grown-up, and you can fall down like you used to fall down when you're 12. Remember playing football when you're 12, tackle football with 12-year-olds with zero pads, and you're just having a great time, just getting pounded into the ground. A dog.
A dog just jumped onto Jake's lap. A very
either,
friendly
so
dog. Yeah.
So I just had the sensation of someone kind of
an animal just kept, was on you. Yeah.
But yeah, the ocean makes you happy, and you can fall down like you did when you were a little kid and not get hurt, like you did not get hurt when you were a little kid. So that's one of the great things about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's some life coaching for the listeners. Go get in the
ocean.
There
it is. I should get back on the kayak or something, and people should go to an ocean.
Yeah. Do you have a wetsuit?
I do.
Yeah, you got to have a wetsuit.
Well, I have the equipment.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm unprepared?
I did not want to insinuate.
I have two wetsuits, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah, I had two. I had like the long pants wetsuit, and I have the spring suit, they call it, right? With the short sleeve pants.
I found I like the long pants even in the summer, the long wetsuit and pants in the summer, because my knees on the board. Anyway, this is some more old guy talk. My knees, they bang against the board. And it hurts when I'm trying to get up. So I like that longer suit.
So you do the long suit because it's sort of knee pads.
Yeah. Yeah. That's me. I would wear it all the time under my clothes like a superhero, except it's hot.
Awfully warm,
isn't
it?
It's awfully warm. And it can get smelly. You'd have to have a different suit for every day of the week. Or maybe two different. One's rinsing while you're wearing the other one.
What do you do when you're on the road? performing? Like when you wake up? I'm looking for pointers for like what to do, because you know when I was in some city, when I was in Syracuse or Chicago.
My last trip to St. Louis, I flew in the day of the show, and I had to get up. So it was one of those ones where you have to get up at 4 in the morning to make your flight
right,
at 6.
Which we have to do a lot, and so, going from west to east.
But I got there way early in the day, so I took a nap in the afternoon at the hotel because I had a show that night. And it was one of those naps where you wake up in the hotel room with the blackout drapes drawn, so there's just a sliver of twilight coming in. Or maybe it was already dark, you know, because it gets dark at 5 o'clock this time of year. And I woke up in that hotel room, and it was like I did not know where I was, and I did not know if it was good morning or nap time, or I was completely disoriented.
How long did it take you to figure it out? Have you ever had one of those? Because once I was in Buffalo, and it was scary because I did, of course you wake up in the hotel and you look around and you look and say, okay, I'm on a trip and I'm here, but it just didn't occur to me. Thank you. Just
nice.
Yeah, just
super
a lady nice. Pulling up.
So
pulling a subway
I feel
grate.
Like. Wow, that was loud too.
Was that a bird or?
I don't think
that?
So. I feel like. That's a dog.
The dog that sees the other dog.
That's the two guys and the dog.
Yeah.
The dog is now interacting with the Asian lady's dog who attacked me earlier. I feel like maybe it's not an age thing because it happens when you're younger. But I feel like that's a good. I've taught myself. Look, if you wake up and you don't know where you are, who you are, or what time of day it is, just don't panic. Just give yourself a few minutes, and it usually doesn't take a few minutes. I mean, it's under a minute, but it's longer than. It's science fiction-y.
It's long enough to be genuinely uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah. But I can't
think of where I am and where city this is.
I just kind of trust that it's going to come to me. But it is a very weird sensation to wake up and have that happen. So usually when I wake up on the road, I don't have that full-on thing. But there is definitely those first few minutes of, okay, this is what's happening. This is where I am. Oh, this again. Right, I'm in a hotel. And, you know, the first day you're waking up to go on the radio, so you're in action to go do something. But when it's a day where you don't have to do anything, I usually get up, you know, and my plan is to get out of the room to go get a coffee and some kind of little breakfasty snack thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I come back to the room and maybe read the paper or a little bit and exercise. And then I go get lunch and then... shower, walk around, you know, like we were talking about.
Yep.
You walk around, you look in a bunch of stores.
Because really
it's not
is.
A super exciting life to be a guy on the road. I mean, when you're younger, you can get hammered at night with the staff. You know, that's fun every once in a while. They go stay out with everybody after the show and have a few drinks with the feature act and stay up late so that you sleep in the next day. But yeah, it's mostly just walking around, looking at people, listening to podcasts or books on my iPhone.
Because we've talked about this before, you know, a number of times, that unusual existence, which is silent.
Yeah, you spend all day quiet, and then you talk for an hour to 300
Boom.
People. You do all your conversation for the whole day at one time with all those people.
And then you go off stage, and everyone says, good. And then you're just saying, thank you. Thanks for coming. Thanks. Yes, it was great. Oh, I had fun, too. Thank you for coming. Of course. Sure, I'll take a picture. All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, different camera. Okay. No, I'll wait. And then you go back to the hotel and are silent
again.
For 20 hours.
Yeah. It's tricky. But, yeah, so, during the day, I exercise. That's the thing, you know. I turned you onto the P90X thing.
You did.
I do that. That's a good thing in the hotel room. I got a few different versions of that now, and then also the Insanity workout thing. So I do a little exercise in the hotel room, and that makes me feel good. Sometimes I go down to the little gym in the hotel. And then, you know, read. You can read. I mean, that's a thing as a married person with a child, with children, when you're at home... There's always some other thing. You got to fix this or get that
right.
Or pick somebody up or cook some food or, you know, take care of something. That when you're on the road, you don't have to do that. So you can just be, you could do all the stuff that people in their 20s do, you know, just goof off. Sometimes I watch a DVD that I got from Netflix or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know? It's pretty exciting.
Is the show still fun? Are you having fun on stage?
Yeah, I like the show. I mean, are you kidding? Yes, yes. I used to kind of say, and I think it started maybe more as a rationalization of it or a joke explanation of it. But it's really true to me. I mean, what kind of job? You get to get up on stage and complain, sort of, in a funny way. You complain about the things that are bugging you, or you go out there and you just put your opinion out. You say your opinion, and everybody validates it by laughing at you because your point of view to them of the world is amusing, and you're right. They're saying, every time they laugh, they're saying, you're right. That guy was a jerk to you at the store or whatever. So they validate your point of view. They laugh. You're in a room full of people laughing. Think about how many people, how much of most people's lives is spent listening to people laugh? It's not that much, but it's a happy thing to hear other people laughing. It's a good experience. I recommend it. So, yeah, I'm in a room full of laughing people. That's my fault. They validate my point of view. At the end, they give you a giant round of applause. Right.
Because really, they haven't laughed that much in quite a while. Because people just don't laugh consistently. You just forced it out of them.
You just help them out with that day.
Right.
You just help them out with that day. And they're grateful, and you're grateful. Everybody had a good time. Then you all talk about what a good time you had.
And they just say, boy, I haven't had that boy. Yeah. That hasn't happened in a long time. I haven't laughed like that.
Then they buy your DVD. So now you got a pocket full of money that you could go get a bite. Your dinner is, forget about what you got paid to do the show. Now, just from your little DVD sales or your T-shirt or whatever you sold, you have enough money to go get something to eat after the show. It's as if it were free. and then before you leave the place to go to the restaurant, you can have a free drink. You can just have a free drink from your friend, the bartender, who, when you say, I'd like a free drink, you really get two free drinks in the same glass.
Yes, they do.
And so
yes, they do.
It's kind of hard to beat that job. Who wouldn't want to? Hey, at the end of your job, this is a good job. You get paid enough to support yourself. You get to goof off. You joke around the whole time at work. At the end of every day of work, we're going to have 300 people give you a round of applause. How's that sound? And then you can have as many free drinks as you want and go get something to eat.
I'm sold.
Yeah, you only have to get up early two or three days a week. Ridiculous. Yeah. There is a kind of a sleep deprivation aspect of a few of your days of the week that's tough. But otherwise, that's the job. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Oh, and you get to meet a lot of other really funny people who are sometimes broken, but in an amusing way. They're not damaged, usually, permanently. Yeah. They think it's funny. They think it's funny, the terrible thing that happened to them.
Yeah, they're publicly broken. They just go, look.
Yeah.
Look at the cracks.
Those are your friends.
Yeah.
Those are the people you get to hang out with. So, yeah, I still like it.
That's good. Well, I think we've done a lot of talking here today.
I really enjoyed this episode. Was this
a mistake, do you think? I don't know. Well,
no.
I guess we'll hear it back and hear if the music
too... Here's what you'll do. You'll listen. If it's good enough that you can offer it up, I feel, you know, who knows? I feel like this was representative of the good time that we have. I feel like the only difference between what happened today and what usually happens when we get together for lunch is that we were holding microphones and we were a little bit conscious of
questions just to kind of move it along or to move it into a different... I don't think there's any... Do you have anything to ask me? I'm sorry, I was asking all the questions because, well, it is my recorder.
Yeah, well, this is your show, but
I think you've asked me whatever you had to ask me. You know, we've had a lot of times together.
Yeah, I don't want to. Let's not steer back into dark waters because we're or deep waters because not
deep
dark waters.
Let's not steer into deep.
Yeah, I missaid that. Let's not steer back into deep waters because we're just bringing it into the dock. Right, I can see the guy on the marina. He's waving at us. Those are cold beers he's got for us. Let's just bring this into the marina.
Okay.
Have the guy fill us up with gas, drink a cold one, and high five.
I think
so. And watch the sunset.
I think so. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
First at 10:01 a.m.
Thomas F. Wilson. Jake Johansson. Tom, I read your book, You Magnificent Bastard. Awesome. I loved it. So much. So much. It was so good. I'm really anxious to talk to you about it. I'm going to read it again. I'll wait if you're going to make changes or whatever, but just so good. good. So call me. I am going to Canada tomorrow, which is Wednesday, Edmonton. I think I told you. The temperature may get above zero while I'm there, but I don't plan to go outside. I'm going to spend a weekend in the mall, my friend. I'm going to see what they got. Okay, call me. But again, congratulations. I mean, or thank you. Bye.
Well, as you can hear, it's it was a terrific phone message, and it meant the world to me, and still does. So I kept it, and I haven't listened to it in a while. It made me feel good just hearing it then. Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast and listening. Tell a friend, would you consider subscribing? And thanks to Jake Johansson, my good buddy. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody over at Nerdist. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me with the live show. We are having fun on the live show. If you see me out there and don't come to the show, that's a you problem. But we'll see you out there. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.